The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Are you okay?
I'm frustrated.
And
I'm frustrated.
Why today?
Because nobody is reporting, and I don't know if it's that they can't figure it out, what this head tax repeal is all about. Nobody is telling
what the angle real story. Is not being hit.
The real reason why they are in their meeting, is it starting right now?
Yes.
City Council meeting?
It is happening right now.
The real reason why they're repealing this head tax. They're saying, well, we finally are listening to the citizens, right? That's their story.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got Sawant, who just had her presser, and it's that big business is controlling this. And I listened to all of that. And, you want the truth?
Yes.
You want to know what's really happening here?
What's really happening?
Let's get right to our top story.
The Big Lead. Top story.
As with everything, and I mean absolutely everything, this is about one thing and one thing only, and that's how much money can government get out of us. And so this business tax, this tax on jobs, it was supposed to raise about $45 million a year. And so if that thing gets shot down by the voters in November, and it would have because the voters hated this thing. So if it had gotten shot down, people would have been motivated to go to the polls to vote against this jobs tax. And they started getting all of this polling that indicated, yeah, people are going to kill this thing with a repeal in November. And so the city council and the mayor, they had a decision to make. Because as you may recall, and this is where I get frustrated because nobody's tied in the fact and the truth of the matter here. If you may recall, back in April, Mayor Jenny Durkan, she said that she wants to get on the ballot this November a $636 million property tax increase to fund K-12 education. Well, if people had been motivated to go vote in November to kill this jobs tax, they would have had that anti-tax fervor, and they would have said no to this education levy. And so for Jenny Durkan and the city council, they had a very simple decision to make. Do we keep the jobs tax on the ballot and risk the voters killing that and the education levy? Or do we kill the jobs tax now and then hopefully people by November will forget what morons we are, and they'll vote yes on this education levy. But here was Jenny Durkan back in April talking about the $636 million property tax increase that she wants from the voters this November.
This is going to be one of the greatest investments the city of Seattle can make in its future. We will be going to the ballot not just to renew our family and education levy and our preschool levy, but to put them together in a holistic package that looks at the continuum of our children to make sure that they have an opportunity for any job in the city of Seattle.
By the way, the more I listen to Jenny Durkan, the fake earnestness in her voice, the way that she stresses some words, it's very odd. It's very annoying. But anyway, so that was the decision. Do we give up the jobs tax and have a shot at the much larger property tax increase? Or do we allow the voters to go and repeal the jobs tax in November? And while they're in a tax repeal mode, they will also say no to the education tax. And so this is not about listening to the citizens, which is what they're trying to sell this as. None of this is about helping the people who are out on the streets. The education levy is not about educating kids. Every single thing they do is calculated at how can we extract the maximum amount of money from people. And so that's why this decision is being made this hour to kill the jobs tax, because they desperately want to save that $636 million property tax increase in November. That is all that it's about. None of this is about helping desperate lives who are out on the streets. It's not about, you know, attracting more drug users to the region or any of that. It's always about how can we get as much money as possible. And I guess I'm frustrated at how people don't recognize that that's the only thing that these politicians care about. It's the only thing they care about. And so if you're wondering, if you're listening to the news, anybody who doesn't connect those dots is just now, you know, the news has to report what the news reports. But as far as people who offer analysis and newspaper columnists and all of that, I haven't heard anybody who's allowed to offer opinion to recognize the truth of the matter here. And so that is it. It is about key. And please, for the love of all that is good, please remember this in November. You must say no to that $636 million property tax increase. You have to remember that they are getting and spending more money than any equivalent city of this size. And they are squandering it. They are blowing it. That's why we have the problems that we have. Our budget is almost double that of Boston, Massachusetts. And our city's problems are exponentially greater than Boston's when it comes to homelessness and crime and all of the rest. They do not know how to manage and spend money in the city of Seattle or in King County or in Washington State, for that matter. Okay, just in the last hour, Kashama Sawant, oh, she still wants the jobs tax. And she had a rally downtown, and she was all fired up about her movement. And I was thinking, I don't want to hear about her movements. But no, her movement apparently is the socialists. And, oh, they are just frustrated and angry that they're not going to get this jobs tax.
The Democratic Party of Seattle, which rules the city, has presided over this crisis over decades, let it worsen with no real solutions. In the face of this perpetual inaction by elected leaders of the Democratic Party, our movement, composed of ordinary renters, working people, and housing activists, including homeless people themselves, we built the movement from the grassroots. We got organized. We built the People's Budget Struggle last fall, through which we brought 400 people to the public hearing who spoke with one voice. City Council, do your job. Address the affordable housing crisis. Build publicly affordable housing, own affordable housing by taxing big business.
And what was clear at this Sawant rally this morning is she is about one thing and one thing only also. And it's not just money. But she is trying to build a national brand. She kept talking throughout about how other cities saw our $15 an hour and now they can do it. And if now that other cities see that we're not going to get this socialist tax, that it's going to be tougher for socialists in other cities. And she was directing her comments at some national socialist organizations because she wants to become a national socialist figure. That's her whole deal right now. But the one thing I agree with her on, the Democrats have ruined this city. I mean, that's what Sawant says, and she's right. Now, the fix for that is not to go even further left on the political spectrum to the socialist-communist alliance that she has now. The solution would be to get some conservative, fiscally responsible managers of money, people who are results-oriented, people who don't want to just get as much money as possible. So her solution is wrong. But when she blames the Democrats for all of these woes, she's absolutely right about that. But she ain't the answer.
These council members are set to destroy within a day what hundreds of us spent months fighting for. Why? Why are the city council doing this? Because they want to throw in the towel and admit defeat before the fight has even begun.
So, man, can you imagine how much her fellow city council members must hate her? She spent this whole rally just ripping the Democrat Party and everybody else on the city council. And again, she's right in that criticism. She's wrong in her proposed solution.
I have a newsflash for the council member.
Ooh, a newsflash. That sounds exciting. I wish I had a breaking news sounder.
I have a newsflash for the council members who say they have no choice. I have a newsflash for them. This was never going to be easy. If you thought it was going to be easy, if you thought big business was not going to mount a serious campaign of opposition, spread lies and misinformation, then you have been living under a rock.
Whew, that was quite a news flash that she had there. You're on the cutting edge of information when you're around Kashama Sawant.
Many of the council members, all Democrats, are presenting this as the sober, responsible thing for them to do as elected representatives. I am standing here as a city council member, as an elected representative of Seattle's working people, to declare that repealing the Amazon tax is not the sober, responsible thing to do. It is a cowardly betrayal of our movement and of the hundreds of thousands of people in this city who are struggling for housing.
Oh, man. I'm serious. They must despise her. She calls everybody else on the council cowards. Oh, man. It just went on and on and on.
While these council members were planning their betrayal behind closed doors, we, in the meanwhile, were getting ready to launch a massive door-knocking campaign to knock on the doors of tens of thousands of working families.
Door-knocking campaign to knock on the doors. I like that. At least she doesn't waste our time.
To explain to them the distortion and lies by big business, to win them over to this fight, and to empower them to get involved themselves.
Okay, so she is fighting back, and she says that for the movement, that they're going to even take it up a notch.
By walking away from this tax, the city council is forcing upon us the loss of a huge opportunity that our movement had created to finally begin to turn the tide on regressive taxation and the gross underfunding of basic needs like affordable housing.
This is unbelievable. Underfunding. She keeps talking about the underfunding, that we're not paying enough in taxes. Again, we have a city budget of $5.6 billion. Boston's is $3.1 billion with almost an identical population. Boston hardly has any homeless on the streets. Boston has more than 50% more cops. Their property crime is much lower. And she says they're underfunded. No, it's you and your colleagues. You couldn't prioritize to save your lives. You squander the $5.6 billion. And I've certainly detailed lots of areas where they squander it. You can't manage any big projects. You go $100 million over on the seawall. We're going to be $1 billion over on the Seattle Tunnel. Taxpayers are going to be on the hook for that. You want this lid tax on the waterfront so you can get hundreds of millions more from property owners. Durkin wants a $656 million property tax increase in November. And Sawant has the audacity to talk about underfunding? No, it is that we have a critically incompetent city council and mayor. Jenny Durkin is incompetent. You don't say we're going to tax people $400 million a month ago and now say, oh, we changed our mind. You should have figured out how much the people hated this before you unanimously voted for it. But that's what incompetent people do, what they're doing right now. And Swat finished with a message to business.
The message they are sending, Amazon simply has to snap its fingers, issue a threat, spend $500,000 on the referendum campaign, and that's all it takes to bring the highest elected body of the city to its knees. Well, the movement is here to say, we do not accept this betrayal. We will keep fighting.
Wrong. Wrong. It's not about Amazon wanting this shut down. It's about the citizens didn't want this tax, and they knew they were going to lose the education levy in November if they kept it on the ballot. And to blame Amazon for this is either stupidity on the part of Sawant, or it's just her playing to her base and willfully lying about what this is all about. And, Bruce Harrell, I am so sick of this word.
I think this is a wise move to press the reset button and examine how we address the issue of homelessness and affordability.
Press the reset button. That's what Sound Transit does. Yeah, we're 11 years behind schedule. We're billions over budget. But we hit the reset button. So now all of a sudden we're on time and on budget. Why do you need a reset button so often? Every level of local government, you're always hitting the reset button. Could it be because every decision you make is a poorly thought out one? And Harold's right about this.
I think you have to convince the public that you are using the money wisely. And I don't think that persuasion has been there.
That's because you're not. You couldn't persuade us. You have to actually start prioritizing and using money wisely. Okay, I got to take a quick time out here. That's the latest on the head tax. The vote's going on right now. We'll have coverage on that throughout the afternoon. I'm going to continue with the big lead into the next segment because we have another example of where sanctuary and the fact that we have so many illegals, and we are top five in the nation in illegals, and another previously deported guy tried to kidnap a 13-year-old girl here in our region. And this is directly attributable to sanctuary status and the fact that our public officials are willing to risk the public's lives because they want to, and again, it's all about money. We want as many illegals as possible, so it'll get us that extra congressional district that we have, so it'll get us more federal money. And wait till you hear what an illegal did trying to kidnap a 13-year-old girl here locally. That is coming up next as the big lead continues here on the Dory Monson Show. Okay, we are getting more information. Some people are already getting kicked out of this head tax meeting. We've got reporter Hannah Scott down there. We'll keep you posted on that throughout the afternoon. But we have some other local news as we continue our extended big lead.
The big lead, big local.
Once again, our region being a sanctuary county, state, has reared its ugly head. Now, I've explained to you the financial motivation behind the sanctuary status. It is not about protecting illegals from a humanitarian standpoint. The reason for sanctuary and their zealous pursuit of it in politics is, as I've explained to you, we have one of the highest populations of illegals in the country. And especially when it's as a percentage of our population. California and Texas have more illegals, but they also have much greater state population. Here in Washington, we are, I believe, number five in the country for number of illegals. And it's because our sanctuary state attitude, this is where people come to seek refuge, knowing that they're not going to be asked about their citizenship status when they come in contact with law enforcement. And the reason our politicians do that is because we have an extra congressional seat in Washington because of the number of illegals in our census count. So it gets you federal dollars. It gets you another guaranteed Democrat seat in Congress. And that's all that people like Jay Inslee and Dow Constantine care about when they declare sanctuary. They want another Democrat in Congress, and they want the money that comes with it. But what you also have to acknowledge is when one of those illegals commits a crime, that needs to be directly tied to and attributed to our politicians. On Friday morning, down in Auburn, a 13-year-old girl told police, this is 11 o'clock Friday morning, 13-year-old girl told police that a man followed her in a vehicle, talked to her, got out of his vehicle, and grabbed her in an attempted abduction. According to police, she resisted and was able to pull away and run away, but she gave a description of the man, and the police later found their suspect, a 43-year-old guy. Let me tell you about Paj Fajardo, the guy that they have arrested. According to the judge in the courthouse during his hearing, he is an illegal who has been twice deported from the United States of America. But because we have such a porous border, because we have a state that tries to attract as many illegals, and it's like the heroin thing. If you tell heroin addicts all around the country that we're not going to arrest you for possession, as is the case in King County and Snohomish County, if you tell them, as in the case of Seattle City Councilwoman Sally Dime Bagshaw, that we're going to look into having the taxpayers buy your heroin, of course all the heroin addicts around the country are going to come to the Puget Sound area. Well, the same is true for illegals. If you say, hey, if you're speeding and you get pulled over, our cops will not, they are not allowed to inquire in your citizenship status. And that can have deadly consequences. In the case of the guy from England a decade ago, who was pulled over by Seattle police, they were not allowed to look into his immigration status, and he, weeks later, walked on the campus of the University of Washington, a gun-free zone, by the way, and shot and murdered his ex-girlfriend who had gotten a protection order against him. That was an illegal from England. And if the Seattle police had been allowed to do their job and ascertain that he was here illegally and turn him over to ICE, that woman would still be alive today. Now, in the case of Paj Fajardo, who's the suspect in the abduction of this 13-year-old girl, the judge said that he's been deported twice before from the country. And his lawyer talked about that in the court hearing for this guy.
Regardless of whether or not he's gone back and forth and whether or not the going back and forth has been voluntary, what's
Yeah, let's call it what it is. It looks like he's been deported twice.
Okay. The woman in court, and I think that's the judge, she goes, let's call it what it is. Looks like he's been deported twice. And his lawyer says, true.
The issue is more that his ties to the community are more here than they are in Honduras. His family is here. His income is here. I don't think the issue is that he is going to flee justice.
So this guy's saying that his client is not a flight risk, and that's why we should let him go, because he has kids here and he has roots here and not in his native Honduras. This is a guy who's been deported twice from the United States of America and is out allegedly abducting or attempting to abduct a 13-year-old girl down in Auburn. Let me tell you a little bit else. According to Cairo 7, his defense attorney told the judge that this guy has a history that includes domestic violence, assault, second-degree burglary, a 2006 warrant for a Pierce County criminal trespass case, and now we have the attempted kidnapping. Great job with that sanctuary status. Dow Constantine, Jay Inslee, when you have a policy, and do American citizens commit crimes? Yes. But when somebody who is in this region specifically because of our sanctuary policy, when they are committing crimes, then that crime is directly attributable to the politicians who craft policies that attract them to our region. And it's got to stop. This is why they do need to build the wall. And this is why they do need to withhold funds from sanctuary cities and counties. Because it's insane to have somebody with this kind of criminal record and he comes to our region knowing that the government is operating a protection racket all for the sake of money. Quick timeout. Big Lead continues with the latest on North Korea and what Trump did today. I'm hopeful, but I'm also a little troubled by it. I'll explain next on the Dory Monson Show. It's interesting. I've told you over the last year plus that I remain cautiously optimistic about President Trump. The economy has certainly done wonderfully well, thanks mostly to not only the tax cuts, but the reduced regulations on business. And as I've said, all I care about in the president is how they handle the economy and, most importantly, if they keep us safe. That's number one job. And North Korea has emerged over the last couple of decades, really, as the greatest threat in the world. And as they acquire nukes, that simply cannot be tolerated. And it's a problem that Barack Obama and George W. Bush and Bill Clinton, they let fester and grow and just kept kicking the can down the road. And Trump, you know, with all the rhetoric of, you know, how he led up to it with my button's bigger than yours and all the threats and calling Kim Jong-un Rocket Man, all of that stuff, Trump at least is dealing with the problem. Now, I will admit, I find it disconcerting to see our flag next to the North Korean flag at the summit because it is an evil regime. It's a despotic, murderous regime. And I heard Ben Shapiro earlier say, yeah, how would you feel if you saw the U.S. flag next to the Nazi flag? People would be a little disquieted by that. And also, Kim's given us absolutely no reason to trust him. But I credit the president for trying. Instead of what's happened the last 20 years, where every other president ignored it and let them acquire nukes and let them become one of the greatest threats to the world. Okay, so Trump had a press conference after the summit. Looks like they made some great progress today. He says that he has a pledge to denuke North Korea from Kim. He talked with Greta Van Susteren, who asked him what surprised him about Kim.
Really, he's got a great personality. He's a, you know, funny guy. He's a very smart guy. He's a great negotiator. He loves his people. Not that I'm surprised by that, but he loves his people. And I think that we have a, you know, the start of an amazing deal. We're going to denuke North Korea. It's going to start immediately, and a lot of other things are happening, including getting the remains back. You know, it's been, I know you've been so involved in so many ways in North Korea, but getting the remains back, Greta, is so important to so many people. They've called me, they've written me letters, please, can you do it? And he's agreed to do that.
And he said that Kim loves the North Korean people.
He's smart, loves his people, he loves his country, he wants a lot of good things, and that's why he's doing this.
But he's starved them, he's been brutal to them, he still loves his people?
Look, he's doing what he's seen done. I mean, if you look at it, but I really have to go by today and by yesterday and by a couple of weeks ago, because that's really when this whole thing started. again, without the rhetoric and without the sanctions were very important. The sanctions are going to remain on until such time as we see, you know, this is going to happen. And we pretty much see that now, but the sanctions will remain on until we really start dismantling or dismantle the nuclear weapons.
Okay, and so I'm encouraged by that. I don't like him talking up, you know, what a funny guy. I mean, because this guy is, he is a dictator and he is murderous. But is this approach going to get, and this is a case where the end could justify the means. If they truly can denuke North Korea and make the world safer, we're in a better place through this process than we were before this whole thing started. Trump also talked to Hannity about all the rhetoric that led up to this, where he said, we will come down with fire and fury and we'll destroy their nation and my button's bigger than yours.
Well, I think without the rhetoric, we wouldn't have been here. I really believe that, you know, we did sanctions and all of the things that you would do. But I think without the rhetoric, you know, other administrations, I don't want to get specific on that, but they had a policy of silence. If they said something very bad, very threatening and horrible, just don't answer. That's not the answer. That's not what you have to do. So I think the rhetoric, I hated to do it. Sometimes I felt foolish doing it, but we had no choice.
So that gets back to end justifies the means. In his press conference, those were one-on-one interviews. In his press conference, he was asked, you know, some people say denuking them's impossible.
Well, I think without the rhetoric, we wouldn't have been here. I really believe.
Here we go.
Well, I think we have to disagree. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. Or I would have respectfully, you know, I would have shaken his hand. I would have said, listen, I'll see you sometime. But I wouldn't have had any interest. No, this was very important. It's in the first paragraph. And it says complete, total denuclearization. Without that, I wouldn't have been interested.
Okay. If he makes this happen, and you combine that with a strong economy, and then if he can start reducing the deficit, which he's been talking about more and more, then Trump moves into the great president category. And I mean, this wild-eyed hatred for him, I've never quite figured out. We'll talk about that more. Fast 15's next.